So thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. Today I want to tell you about some work that I've been doing with Larry Melnikoff, who is also a postdoc, was a postdoc at Chicago, is now in Potsdam. And it basically concerns computing in various aspects of compactifications of the heterotic string. Now, why would anyone want to do such a thing? Well, I hear phenomenology is pretty interesting these days. So you might ask the question, how do you realize something quasi-phenomenologically realistic in string theory? And people have thought about this very old question for a long time and come up with various schemes and scenarios. But perhaps one of the simplest is the plain old heterotic string compactified on a Calabi-Yau. The theory is relatively simple and gives rise to some of the sort of more familiar field theories with some minimal supersymmetry coupled to gravity. And the picture is quite simple. We, as usual, take our 10-dimensional space, ansatz a 4x6 split. We have some internal space here, which for us will be typically a Calabi-Yau threefold. And because we're in the heterotic string, we also have a choice of vector bundle on top of the threefold, and that choice of vector bundle will strongly dictate the gauge dynamics in four dimensions. And so people have worked very hard just with this simple scenario, constructed various choices of vector bundles in supergravity, and come up with some fairly realistic models with Kara-Mehta, a Higgs doublet, some SU5 gut that can be broken down to the standard model by Wilson lines. So that's all good, but generically these approaches are limited to supergravity, so you might ask, how do you do this in from the point of view of the string world sheet? And of course the reason is well known. Supergravity is an effective field theory, so it's really only valid when all the cycles of the internal space are large compared to the string scale. Then your effective action is good, but if you have a cycle that shrinks, then you're going to generate lots of string corrections. So you really need to compute how these string corrections modify your effective action. And you really need some string world sheet description. So today, I'm basically going to try and ask and answer this question. What is the effect of these string corrections on the qualitative physics of a heterotic compactification on a Calabi-Yau? How does one compute in such a scenario? So just to make my life simple, as I mentioned, I'm going to restrict to a Calabi-Yau. So non-Kähler spaces and torsion and other such fun things can wait for later. Then our low-energy physics is going to just purely be dictated by the topology of the internal space and, again, our choice of vector bundle. So let's motivate ourselves with an easy example. This example has the name of standard embedding. And so this is where we choose our vector bundle to be, which I've labeled curly E here, to be equal to the tangent bundle. And in that case, the gauge connection is simply set equal to the spin connection. Again, why would you want to do such a thing? Well, there are constraints in supergravity, for example, a Bianchi identity that you need to satisfy. And this is a very easy way to do that. You can compute the low energy effective field theory. There's an unbroken E6 gauge group with an E8 hidden sector. There are a bunch of matter multiplets in the 27 and 27 bar of E6, and there are a bunch of moduli. But most relevant for today is the world sheet theory has 2,2 supersymmetry, and so people have shown how to compute Yukawa couplings, so these couplings between the bosons and fermions, purely in the context from purely from the string world sheet. There is also this phenomena of mirror symmetry, which tells you that these threefolds come in pairs, and also the metric, the Kähler metric, in front of the moduli satisfies very special constraints and henceforth is known as special geometry. So what I want to do today is ask the question, what happens when we don't choose the standard embedding? So essentially we're going to wiggle this gauge connection a bit and try and compute these quantities from the point of view of the world sheet. So we'll be able to compute quantum corrections to the classical supergravity approximation. And so the eventual hope is that we might get some control over the supergravity scenarios that I pointed out in the previous slide. So what happens when we choose a more general choice of vector bundle? Well, we get a wiggle, A is no longer equal to omega, the spin connection. We have a reduced amount of supersymmetry, we only have 0.2. However, for the class of theories we're going to consider today, which are basically small deformations, from the point of view of the space-time physics, this is a pretty benign thing to do. You wouldn't expect anything drastic to change. Perhaps the Yukawa couplings might vary smoothly with bundle moduli or something like this. So we want to ask, what features of 2-2 theories persist for 0-2 theories? So what's the moduli space of these theories? So what is the entire space of 0-2 CFTs? What are some of the qualitative features of of these theories, like where do they become singular? So where would you need, say, non-perturbative G-string effects? How do you compute your color couplings? How do they depend on the bundle moduli? And finally, is there a notion of heterotic mirror symmetry, which sort of has both a computational and pure mathematics interest? And is there a notion of special geometry? So does the metric on the moduli space satisfy the same certain constraints? And happily, we'll be able to answer at least some of these questions today, certainly the first three, with the last one being for future thought, there are results that are suggestive of an affirmative answer. And again, I'll just restrict my class of models where epsilon is some deformation, some small but finite deformation from the tangent bundle. So again, just to point out how little we know about the heterotic string. So the heterotic string compactified on the quintic, for example, has an entire 0-2 moduli space that's relatively unexplored from the point of view of the world sheet. So we have all these question marks here. I'll split the moduli space into a little cartoon. this red line is the 2-2 locus, and today we're going to explore sort of this region here and trying to raise those question marks. And in the future, we hope to explore theories that don't have a 2-2 locus. So these would be some higher rank bundles. So the basic theme of our results, as I've kind of alluded to, is the features of 2-2 theories we'll find actually persist for 0-2 theories. The reason for why that works will be very different, but at the end of the day, what works for 2-2 will work for 0-2. And from the space-time point of view, that's fairly reasonable.
See, I'm probably willing to ask you a basic question. So I think about the tangent bundle as usually being a frame bundle. What do we do to make it into a vector bundle?
What do you mean?
I mean, the spin connection is something I normally think of as something that has lots of extra indices that act in space-time. What does it mean to set that equal to a...
to a gauge field?
A gauge field, yeah.
So basically what you're saying is that the spin connection is forming representation of some local Lorentz group. Or is a connection for that. And so you can do on a Calabi-Yau, the local Lorentz group can be SU3.
The holonomy is SU3.
So
you just pick an SU3 subgroup of
right.
The gauge group.
Oh, okay, so we've just chosen the gauge group to be
sure.
SU3, just the holonomy.
Right, yeah, so that's what I mean by restricting to rank 3 bundles. I really mean bundles that have SU3 structure.
Okay.
And so the unbroken gauge group will always be E6. And so in the future you might wonder, how do you do this for more general compactifications? so let me just give you an outline for the rest of the talk, now that we're all motivated to study the heterotic string. First I'll just review our playground, which are Witten's gauged linear sigma models. So these are basic abelian gauge theories. And then I'll discuss some different models, starting with what I call the V model, which will describe toric varieties. These will be massive theories, but we'll find they're very useful for discussing the more interesting construction, which are Calabi-Yau's, which I've called the M model. And then I'll discuss the varying sort of twistings or tricks you can use to compute correlators in these theories. And then finally, I'll sum up and give a summary of sort of evidence for heterotic mirror symmetry. So moving right along, the gauge linear sigma model was written down by Witten about 15 years ago. And it's a fairly simple field theory. It's got some U1s coupled to some matter. You might ask, why is it useful? Well, the way I think about it, it's a very useful way to generate non-trivial infrared theories. So these infrared theories might be CFTs or sigma models with some target space, Finding and solving these CFTs is quite hard, so you appeal to universality. You say, I'm going to find a theory in the UV. It'll have some supersymmetry. For us today, it'll have 0-2 supersymmetry. It won't be conformal, so there'll be RG flow. But then I can twist this theory so I can compute RG invariants that'll stay the same along this flow, and thereby I'll be able to compute essentially correlators in the UV, and they'll be guaranteed to be correlators in the infrared theory. So that's the basic idea. The GLSM is a really neat trick for getting control over non-trivial CFTs. These non-trivial CFTs will describe for us Calabi-Yau's, or the alpha prime corrected version. So as I mentioned in the outline, there are going to be two classes of models. There's going to be the V model. So this will be a toric variety. If you don't know what a toric variety is, I sort of think of it as being a complex sphere. So for example, P4. And these theories won't be conformal, but they'll be very useful toy models for us. But the way in which they'll be toy models is in the sense that we'll construct hypersurfaces inside these toric varieties. So again, a canonical example is the quintic in P4, so some degree 5 polynomial in this complex projective space. And I've tried to, it hasn't really turned out too well, but this is a sphere, so this is our toric variety. And inside the toric variety, we have our little hypersurface, which I've labeled M. And so that, for us, is our Calabi-Yau. And so it's in the M model that we'll be able to compute new color couplings for the 27 bar and 27 cubed for the matter fields in the heterotic compactification. Let me also describe the deformations that we'll consider. Remember, we're deforming away from the tangent bundle. And I've also labeled them into two different classes. To go hand in hand with these two guys. So first, rather sort of unclear notation at the moment, I've got a bunch of E deformations, and these essentially correspond to deforming the tangent bundle associated with the ambient space, so associated with that toric variety or complex sphere. Then I can say I also have a hypersurface inside the toric variety, so I can wiggle the hypersurface a bit, and I've just labeled those J deformations. So the deformations of the tangent bundle associated with the polynomial that defines this surface here. And so what we're going to do today is compute how do correlators, so how do the color couplings depend on E and J? And we'll find there's a nice structure. So let me just flash up the usual, hopefully kind of familiar GLSM. So it splits into a kinetic piece plus an FI piece plus a superpotential term. The kinetic term looks like this. We have some matter multiplets here. They're essentially the coordinates for our target space. We have a twisted chiral field here, which is basically our gauge field strength. We have an FI parameter here, which I've written in this form. So that's the FI parameter in there, which is also written here. This is probably not as familiar for people, but it's very convenient for me to exponentiate these FI parameters because I'll essentially be computing instanton corrections where I evaluate the action on the gauge, the instanton configuration. And these Qs appear very naturally when you do that. So those guys will essentially dictate for you the size of the space that you're interested in. We also have our superpotential term. And this is what determines the difference between the V and M model. So when there's no superpotential, you have a toric variety, so this complex sphere. If you turn on the superpotential, then it implies constraints on the matter fields such that they carve out this hypersurface. So this is what Witten wrote down in 1993, and it's been well and truly studied. And what we're going to do today is consider deforming the theory so that it has only 0-2 supersymmetry. And I think the easiest way to understand the field content of 0-2 theories is to decompose the 2-2 fields in terms of their 0-2 components. So now phi here means a different thing. So recall we had the 2-2 phi multiplets in the previous slide. They decompose into a bosonic multiplet and a fermionic multiplet. A fermionic multiplet is a multiplet whose lowest component is a fermion, funnily enough. And so think of these fermion multiplets as basically being the left-moving heterotic fermions. So they're really telling you what the gauge bundle is doing. We also have this additional stuff here that's associated with the gauge field in the GLSM. So it's the G for GLSM. And again, the geometric interpretation is that phi will typically parameterize for you your toric variety. Gamma will parameterize for you the bundle. So obviously, to deform away from a tangent bundle, we're going to have to somehow change the behavior of these gammas. How do we do that? Well, there's a constraint from supersymmetry. These fermions must obey, that's a D, by the way. These fermions must obey a constraint such that their covariant derivative with respect to the superspace variables is equal to some holomorphic function. And it's this holomorphic function that precisely determines the behavior of the bundle. So you can write down your exact sequence and you'll see that E precisely does this for you. So what's an example? On the 2-2 locus, E takes a very simple form. It's just, it's more or less proportional to phi. I've omitted some terms, but that's basically what it is. So what we're going to do today is consider a more general form where we add sort of arbitrary monomials that are compatible with gauge invariants. So an example here is just some linear combination of matter fields of the same gauge charge, and this matrix M contains within it a bunch of complex parameters, and they'll essentially be the bundle moduli some field redefinitions. And so these are what I call the E deformations. So they correspond to deforming the tangent bundle on the toric variety. So now we all understand GLSMs. Let's move on. So let's discuss a model that describes our complex sphere, so our ambient space. And it, as I mentioned, this will be a very useful warm-up when we come to studying Calabi-Yau's. Essentially, the techniques we discuss here will follow through very simply after we use, we'll show the formula holds. So this is the case where there's no superpotential. So our action consists of a kinetic piece plus an FI piece. And I've just written down the D term. So the FI terms induce a D term, a non-trivial D term. And it's basically a sum of squares equals to some constant. That constant's the FI parameter. And so this sort of can roughly tell you that your target space really is something like a complex sphere. You have a sum of squares equals to a constant. You also have a quotient by a gauge field action and an exceptional set, and that's what produces the toric variety for you. And the R's are the FI parameters, which are basically Kähler moduli. This field theory has a very interesting phase structure. It was sort of one of Witten's original motivations for studying this theory. So I've labeled them the red zone and the green zone. First of all, let's go out into the green zone. And this is basically the Higgs branch. So this is the region of parameter space where these D terms have solutions. And in that case, the infrared nonlinear sigma model has a nice geometric interpretation. It's a sigma model with a target space that's a toric variety. Furthermore, if you go further and further out along this axis, so you basically take R to be very large, that's the same as taking the volume to be very large. And you expect there that quantum corrections become suppressed. You recover a classical supergravity limit. You don't have many quantum corrections to correlators. On the other hand, when you go towards the origin, you're going to generate lots of quantum corrections, and so we want to get control over these guys. That's what we want to understand. You might ask, what happens when we go to essentially negative volume? So we take R to be negative. What does that mean? Well, you lose your geometric interpretation, but from the point of view of the GLSM, everything's well behaved. So instead, you now go on to the Coulomb branch. So here the U1s are unbroken. You can show that, and we'll see in a few slides, that the dynamics is completely controlled by a one-loop twisted superpotential, and that completely determines for your correlators. And the nice thing about that is that you have automatically summed up all the quantum corrections that you would have to compute term by term in the green zone. So what's an easy way to compute? Well, for 2-2 theories, you can do a trick. You can do what's called the A-twist. And this is not as scary as one might think at first. Basically, what the mouse are doing is modifying what you mean by the energy momentum tensor. And you do that in such a way that your superchargers become scalars that allows you to define a nilpotent operator, and you can study the cohomology of that operator. And the beauty of it is that the stress energy tensor becomes exact in this QT cohomology. So essentially all your observables are RG invariant. Furthermore, there's a phenomenon of localization. So basically your world sheet metric, your theory is independent of your world sheet metric. You can scale it up as much as you like, and your semi-classical analysis will become arbitrarily good. So you can use that to argue that the answers you'll get using these types of techniques are actually exact. And as I alluded to in the previous slide, you can go to the green zone or red zone to compute. So you can go to the Higgs branch, and there correlators reduce to a sum over gauge instanton configurations. You can go to the Coulomb branch, where you have a one-loop potential. And furthermore, singularities occur in codimension one, so that means you can continue around them. And so the answers are basically the same. They are the same. How does this change for 0-2? Well, remember our theme. For 0-2, things work much the same. You can do what we call an A half twist. So now we only have a right moving supercharge, but he can still, you can show that he still forms for you a nice topological ring. You can study its cohomology elements, and they're still in by these sigmas. Theory's not topological, but it's conformal. So you can still apply. Well, first of all, your observable is going to be RG invariant. You can still play the localization game because you can, again, scale up world sheet metrics. So localization still works. Then there's a question, do these two methods of computing still apply? And furthermore, you might ask questions like, where are the correlators singular? Where's the theory badly behaved? How do these correlators depend on the moduli?
So particle zero is a singular point.
It's a singular point, yeah. Certainly for, yeah, so the basic example is the quintic in there.
There's also
the theta angle. That's, yeah, so that's what I mean by codimension one. You can continue around. Yeah.
And its location shifted by the quantum correction.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see that later on. So let me review what happens on the 2-2 locus again. This was discussed by Morrison and Plesser in 95. And so sort of very general considerations mean you can argue that correlators reduce to a sum over gauge instanton configurations. So you have this sum here. And so sigma are our observables. So we're computing a correlation function. N labels the instanton number. Q to the N is the action evaluated on that field configuration. So you're basically summing a power series. And then basically what you want to do is fix some instanton number and compute term by term, and then sum up your answer. And that'll be your exact answer for the correlator. And because we have localization, all the non-zero modes actually cancel. So you're left with an integral over zero modes. The sigma fields are again like 1-1 forms on the target space. So sort of a technical relabeling here, I've just called these eta, which are classes on the space of zero modes. Furthermore, you can show this space of zero modes is also a toric variety. What's that by you? Well, toric geometry is very combinatorial. You can basically apply some well-defined techniques and compute this answer geometrically. And what's this guy here? Well, he's basically there to turn this object into a top form, so you really can do some integral. So I can flash up more details, but I've just explained them in words. So again, we have a toric variety. We're reduced to zero modes, which are going to be holomorphic maps of certain degrees. And we have him, the Arab Euler class. How does this change for 0-2? Well, for 0-2 theories, we showed it's much the same. Your answer looks the same, except you put a tilde. So now these objects here are not just 1-1 classes. They're one forms evaluated in the dual or the bundle. And so they're actually, in some sense, more sheafy. I won't discuss sheaves anymore. But Guffman and Katz in 2007 studied these correlators using some very sophisticated commutative algebra and checked co-chains and wrote down some answers. However, the techniques are quite sophisticated and really can only be applied in one example, that's P1 cross P1. So we asked the question, the GLSM actually naturally builds for us toric structures. Can we construct some toric-like methods to compute these intersections? And the answer is, well, we think we can. So we basically wrote down some conjectures for how you would compute motivated by the field theory itself. We basically looked at the field theory, integrated out fields, studied the structures that you get, and were able to sort of guess what the answer might be. And sort of it works very naturally. So you have this object chi, which on the 2-2 locus takes this form. Q is a set of gauge charges. Eta is the 1-1 form. And you simply replace Q by this matrix M, which contains within it all its bundle deformations. So it's a very natural way to generalize to 0-2 theories. We checked it works in a number of examples, and computations with this method are purely combinatorial, though we don't have any sort of real mathematical justification for it yet. So that's one method. A second method is to go to the Coulomb branch, so that's the red zone. And the nice thing about this is it's a very simple algebraic technique. The way it works is the matter fields get massive in the Coulomb branch, so you can integrate them out, and that'll generate for you a one-loop potential. And then you use anomaly matching arguments and holomorphy to argue that this is actually exact. It actually captures all the quantum corrections. And so then you can write down a formula. Again, you use the trick of localization. So just to explain the features of this formula, you have a correlator given by a sum over Coulomb vacua. So in the Coulomb branch, there are discrete Coulomb vacua. Here are incitations. Then you get this measure, and this measure comes from integrating out the non-zero modes. And you can check that it reproduces the answers I presented on the last slide, which is good. Furthermore, it agrees with the answers that Guffin and Katz produced, so that's good. So it seems to work. Let me just flash up an example. This is basically a weighted projective space and some resolution of some Z2 singularities. So you can apply either of the methods I just described, and you get the same answer. And here are two examples here. So the details are probably not so important, except to point out that some qualitative features. So the epsilon parameters here, these parameters that go inside that matrix that rotated the matter fields. So they're characterizing for you the 0-2 deformations. They're multiplying some Qs. These Qs are the Kähler moduli. It has a couple of poles here. So there's a pole when D1 vanishes, and there's a pole when D2 vanishes. And the particular functional forms are listed here. So those poles are actually interesting. So first of all, if we were to turn off all of the epsilon parameters, so that means we'd be going back to the 2-2 locus, we would basically, this guy would just become 1, so he goes away. This guy stays the same, he's still there. A lot of these terms drop out, and you actually recover, first of all, the 2-2 answers that you could compute using the techniques of Morrison and Plessisay. And you also have this singularity here. So that's good, it's sort of sensible. The singularity is basically a singularity like r equals 0. You recover the 2-2 result. What do you see that's new? Well, you see an additional singularity that occurs purely in the 0-2 moduli space. Furthermore, it's independent of Q. So that means I can take an arbitrary large radius, say, and the singularity will still be there. And you can basically, from the point of view of the GLSM, argue this corresponds to fields becoming light that you thought were heavy. So this is These are just examples, some of the examples of the new structures you see when you study 0-2 theories as opposed to just sticking to the 2-2 locus. You can also see new phases that you didn't know were there from 2-2 theories. The basic point is that 0-2 theories have a very intricate moduli space, and so we're just trying to explore that and find some qualitative new phenomena. So that's the warm-up. You know, we're feeling loose. Let's go on to discuss the Calabi-Yaus. And Calabi-Yaus are important because then we can actually compute Yukawa couplings. To construct a Calabi-Yau, as I mentioned, you turn on a superpotential. In order to do that, you have to insert two additional multiplets, which I've labeled phi 0 and gamma 0. These are to satisfy certain anomaly constraints. And here's the action in 0-2 superspace. If you're on the 2-2 locus, then you think of this function J, which written J here. So you have this function J, you have the fermionic multiple at gamma. So gamma, again, parameterizes for you the bundle. So on the 2-2 locus, J is basically like the derivative of your usual 2-2 superpotential. And what this does is it induces F terms. So these F terms will imply constraints. So for example, you might have a polynomial vanishing in, say, P4 that would define the quintic for you. So this carves out this hypersurface M on top of the usual D terms that we already had. So we have the J's, they define our hypersurface, but they also give rise to a whole new class of 0-2 deformations. So instead of just having J being the derivative of this superpotential, you can add arbitrary monomials. So for example, the quintic, we add degree 4 monomials, like phi to the 4th, phi cubed to the 4th, phi 3 to the 4th, sorry. And essentially what this does is it wiggles the hypersurface coming from, the tangent bundle coming from the hypersurface. So this cartoon hasn't turned out as well as it does there, but so basically you're sort of just deforming the hypersurface and its tangent bundle. So these are our second class of 0-2 deformations. So again, just to summarize, we have deformations from the ambient space, we also have deformations from the hypersurface. How do you compute in these theories? Well, again, there is this trick of the A-twist. So on the 2-2 locus, you can do an A-twist, and localization still works in the same way as in the V-model. You can compute the BRST cohomology, and again, they're represented by these sigma fields, which are Wollmann forms now on the hypersurface. What changes is the selection rule. There's a selection rule that changes. So now you compute three-point functions as opposed to, say, four-point functions for the P4. And with the A-twist, you'll actually compute 27 bar cubed Yukawas. The vacuum equations are that what you would write down for the V-model with some extra constraints. For example, the hypersurface must vanish. As a consequence, the moduli space of zero modes, when you come to computing correlation functions, traces out this rather hard to deal with and nasty locus, M sub P. And at the end of the day, that means it's very hard to actually directly compute those gauge instanton corrections. Basically, you lose toric geometry, and that makes it very hard to actually directly compute stuff. But all is not lost. The superpotential you can show is actually QT exact. So what that means is essentially the details of the superpotential don't affect physical correlators. And then Morrison and Plesser then argued that there's a simple way to actually relate these M-model correlators to correlators in the ambient space. So what you do, according to the quantum restriction formula, is you take this correlator, turn it into a V-model correlator with an incitation. That incitation includes some very coarse data about the hypersurface. It's the anticanonical class. Minus K is the anticanonical class, which in terms of GLSM variables is related to this sigma field. So basically what you've done is you turned, at least a priori, a very hard computation in terms of a very doable computation, because now you can apply any of those techniques by some engaged instantons or the Coulomb branch to actually work out what a Yukawa coupling is. So then we ask the question again, does this work for 0-2 theories? I hope you've guessed the answer. We show it does work. But first, it's not quite as simple as just sort of replacing objects by tilds. So for example, with only 0-2 supersymmetry, only the anti-holomorphic part of the superpotential is exact. So you might ask the question, well, do correlators now care about the superpotential and the corresponding deformations? And that would lead you to ask the question, does quantum restriction still apply? So can you still reduce M-model correlators, so correlators on the hypersurface to correlators in the ambient space? We showed it does. We showed it in sort of a field theory way. So basically, we broke down our correlator, broke down the path integral, and again, we've applied localization, so our computation reduces to an integral over zero moment. And then what we do is we integrate out all the fields that weren't present in the V model, so these phi zero and gamma zero multiplets. We have some additional data describing the hypersurface, so the polynomial, and also it appears in this function G. Then you use this fact that if you look at the supersymmetry algebra, you see P bar is actually exact. So again, formally it shouldn't affect correlators. Because everything's nice and compact, we can basically take a limit of P bar going to zero, and so you're localizing yourself to the hypersurface. And when you do that, you see that this G function drops out, this guy becomes one, and you end up precisely after you sum over instantons with the quantum restriction formula of Morrison and Plesson. So that's good. So again, we've taken a hard computation and turned it into an easy one. An important feature I just want to quickly point out is that these J polynomials and deformations thereof actually dropped out of the answer. So we've shown in the A half-twisted theory there is no dependence on complex structure moduli and there's no dependence on these J deformations. So that'll be kind of neat when we come to discussing mirror symmetry. Just some additional comments. You can apply this to general constructions of complete intersections, basically sort of any toric variety or hypersurface and toric variety that people want to study. And you're going to compute Yukawa couplings. It's unnormalized because I haven't computed the Kähler potential yet. So let me flash up again an example. It's our P4. And we're going to turn on a superpotential. On the 2-2 locus, it would schematically take this form. We're going to consider J, so we just take derivatives. And then we apply any of our V-model techniques, so the Coulomb branch or some engaged instantons, and the quantum restriction formula, and we can just write down 27-cubed Yukawa couplings, 27-bar-cubed Yukawas. And so, again, some qualitative features is that you can parametrize easily the singular loci of these theories. So you have this, again, Q2 equals a quarter singularity. But you also have this new singularity with bundle parameters in here. And so one interesting thing to us is that it really appears as though Qs and Es appear on the same footing. And just in the same way as complex structure and Js dropped out, you see the same thing in the B-twist, that Js and complex structures appear on the same footing. And again, you can see these bundle singularities in the large volume limit, which corresponds to turning off these Qs. You get the 2-2 answer if you turn off Es, so everything seems sensible. But again, these are features that you would not see in supergravity. So they're features that you only see after you compute all the quantum corrections. And again, these singular loci are basically where string perturbation theory is broken down. So, I guess it's not really clear what you'd need in a heterotic string to resolve them. So, Let me switch direction slightly and discuss the same model, the hypersurface, but I'm going to do a different topological twist. I'm going to do what's called a B-half twist. And on the 2-2 locus, let me just review what happens quickly. So first of all, you can show, I haven't written a supercharge. So you basically you generate a BRST charge, which is a sum of Q plus bar and Q minus bar. You can study its cohomology. You find that the cohomology elements are given by monomials. So these are basically complex structure deformations. You can also show that correlators are not quantum corrected, so you basically can compute everything geometrically. Correlators depend holomorphically on complex structure moduli, and because you're computing 2,1 forms, you're computing 27 cubed Yukawa couplings. So how does this change for 0-2 theories? Well, for a large class of models, which I'll make more precise in a second, we showed the same sort of features persist. Basically, what we do is we take the Lagrangian, we analyze at zero modes, and integrate them out. And we can show that for a large class of models, there are no quantum corrections, so they're independent of Kähler moduli. But we can't show this in general just by using index theory. So we can't show that there are, all models are ruled out by instanton corrections just using index theory. I'll describe this a little bit more in the next slide. You need to do something more. But for those that are independent of quantum corrections, if the GLSM in addition has a Landau-Ginzburg phase, so this is where you basically take the Kähler parameter to be some large negative value, so your infrared theory looks like a Landau-Ginzburg theory, then we showed that correlators don't depend on E deformations. So essentially what we've shown is that for these theories, correlators depend only on complex structure moduli and J deformations. And this is very similar to how it works on the 2-2 locus, and it'll be relevant for any mirror symmetry considerations. So here is an example of a toric variety that cannot be ruled out from having instanton corrections, at least using some index theory arguments. You have a charge matrix here. So these label the charges under the two U1s of the GLSM. You have a bunch of matter fields obeying a superpotential. You can show this is a nice smooth toric variety, and this is defining a nice smooth hypersurface. Although we can't show that it's not instanton corrected off the 2-2 locus, there has basically been related work in the literature which suggests the answer is, well, yes, it's still not quantum corrected. The essential reasoning being is that you reduce your correlator to an integral of a top form, and then you would want to argue that top form is actually exact. So when you integrate it over a complex surface without a boundary, you'll get zero. But for that, you need to analyze the bosonic sector, which is actually quite hard to do.
So just now, shouldn't some of the charges be zero?
Are they not? Yes, it's typos. There is a phi zero and a gamma zero here, which I've left out. And they would have a charge.
So that's some of them.
Yeah. Good. So let's do an example again. I'm going to consider my favorite space, P4. And this is kind of illustrative of how things work in general. So we want to consider the M model. So we're going to carve out our hypersurface. And you can show using the zero mode counting argument, which I didn't go into any detail of explaining, that this theory is independent of any quantum corrections. You can't get instantons in this theory. This theory also has a Landau-Ginzburg phase. So for a certain limit for these Kähler parameters, taking them to be large and negative, the theory has a Landau-Ginzburg infrared fixed point. And you want to consider correlation, so three-point functions of monomials, these curly O's here. And these O's are, there's a phi zero and some function f, where that function f is something that you would put in inside the defining polynomial. And when you, and these guys here correspond to 2, 1 forms on the target space, that is, you're computing 27 cubed G-Kawa couplings. We want to take a Landau-Ginzburg limit, so this is what I mean by taking these guys to be large and negative. We just set them equal to some parameter, and we take expand around the parameter being infinity. So we take our GLSM Lagrangian, expand around that point in parameter space, and you find, after you do some convenient but technical field redefinitions, that the action is precisely a Landau-Ginzburg. The GLSM, reduces precisely to the action of a Landau-Ginzburg orbifold. And furthermore, these phi zeros and gamma zeros all drop out, so you're computing some classical intersection. And that's precisely how it works on the 2-2 locus. The neat thing is that actually E parameters, so the E deformations of the ambient space, dropped out of this correlator. So we could show that the B half theory only depended on complex structure moduli and J deformations. So for the A half twist, we showed the opposite. We showed the theory depended only on Kähler plus E deformations. The B half twisted theory depends really only on sort of the details of the superpotential. So that's a quite neat sort of decomposition of the moduli space of these 0-2 theories. So let me just discuss now mirror symmetry. This is the only slide where I haven't got comprehensive results at the moment. But our results are suggestive of something. So on the 2-2 locus, there's quite a pretty statement of mirror symmetry. Basically, you have your M model, so your hypersurface. You can do an A-twist. So that A-twisted theory depends only on Kähler parameters, so sizes and volumes and so on. And because you construct this model using toric geometry, there's a well-defined notion of its mirror, which you can also construct via toric geometry. This is written down by Batyrev and Borisov. And I've called that W. So you take that Kalabiau and you study its B-twist over here. This B-twisted model only depends on complex structure moduli. So we have a theory that depends on Kähler moduli, we have a theory that depends on complex structure moduli. And then you can basically, the statement of mirror symmetry is that you can exchange them. So you can exchange this theory with that theory. Alternatively, of course, you could study the B-twisted M model and the A-twisted W model and exchange those two. So again, this was studied by Morrison and Plesser in a couple of papers, and other people, Green and Aspinwall. And so in the language of the GLSM, the nice thing is that you're comparing correlators that are simple rational functions of moduli, and so it's very sort of easy to compare the singular loci and just to exchange the two. So what we've shown, again this is kind of like a summary, we've shown that you can construct an A half twisted M model that depends only on Kähler and E deformations, and you can count those, we showed how to count those deformations. You can also construct a B half-twisted W model that depends only on complex structure and J deformations, modulo these certain constraints. So then the natural question now is there a mirror map? So can we show that this map here, this theory here, can be exchanged with this theory here? And the answer is we don't know yet. So this is currently work in progress. But because the moduli space splits in this nice way, these theories are well-defined and decoupled, it's sort of suggestive there might be a map. So the next step is, of course, is to compute for some candidate M and W Kalabiaus, compute the number of parameters on this side, the number of parameters on this side. If they're the same, well, yes, it's suggestive that you'll have some type of exchange. So let me just summarize what I've talked to you about today. So what I've done is explored some aspects of 0-2 theories via the gauge linear sigma model. We've shown how to compute Yukawa couplings, or unnormalized Yukawa couplings, in these theories. And although we've discussed bundles that are obtained by deformations of the tangent bundle, We're sort of hopeful our techniques will persist for more interesting compactifications. We found the moduli space has an interesting structure. You can have that it emits a nice split into Kähler plus E deformations and complex structure and J deformations, and you can generate or parameterize for yourself the singularity structure of these moduli spaces, sort of a very meromorphic way. But furthermore, there are lots of future directions. I've mentioned one of them in the previous slide. Is there a notion of mirror symmetry? So is there an exchange? A slightly different but related problem is computing the Kähler potential for the matter and moduli fields. So that's potential in front of the effective action. And sort of using CFT techniques to construct relations and to really just try and search for some generalization of special geometry. So our intuition so far is what works for 2-2 works for 0-2, so we're hopeful, again, that you'll be able to do that. And finally, one would really want to apply these techniques to higher rank bundles and thereby sort of understanding the full range of the heterotic moduli space. So that's it. So thank you for your attention.
So, you probably said it, but what was the reason that you're not sure if your technique goes over to higher rank bundles? It was just the instant time question, or?
So you're basically asking what's different for theories without a 2-2 locus. So for a start, theories with a 2-2 locus, the number of phi and gamma multiplets are the same. And so there's still some residual structure of 2-2 supersymmetry there. That's not true for higher rank bundles, where you don't have that thing. Furthermore, it's sort of, you have to work a lot harder to construct well-defined theories, I guess. But essentially, the thing that really worked for us was localization. And all that really required was some fermionic symmetry. So for us, it was the supersymmetry, and that will still be there. So our correlators should still localize, and we should still be able to compute around instanton configurations. The question is, what are those instanton configurations? I don't have a great answer for you, because if I did, I probably would have. But I guess those are some sort of rambling thoughts that you might consider. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Yeah?
And sometimes the 2-2 theory has a hidden n equal to 2 supersymmetry in 4 dimensions, because we can relate it to the
order. Yeah, sure, sure, yeah. Yeah.
So we know that a lot of things in n equal to 2 are very special to n equal to 2.
Yeah.
And don't go down to n equal to 1.
Yeah.
So if we have a moduli space, get correct from n equal to 1, then we can do 2.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah. Maybe. So to put it in a historical context, maybe people thought that, you know, heterotic 0-2 theories were completely unstable and didn't even exist. And then various people like Distler and Witten and Beasley and Silverstein have shown that you can basically the theories that are constructed as infrared fixed points of the GLSMs are actually stable. The instanton corrections that would destabilize you actually cancel in magical ways. But even then it was thought, well, 0-2 theories might be stable, but it's really hard to compute in them. And so what we've shown is that sort of contrary to, basically the intuition is that what you're doing from this point of view of supergravity is a very benign thing. You're not changing the physics of the space-time theory too much by just wiggling the tangent bundle.
Yeah, but when you say special geometry, that's...
So special geometry, yeah, no. this is probably over-optimistic.
It will be generalized to special geometry.
Yes.
So it wouldn't be that special.
Right? Semi-special.
But I mean, so the entire sort of thought for studying special geometry is... this was studied purely in the context of the heterotic string by Dixon, Kaplanovsky, and Louis. And a lot of their analysis basically relied on the presence of one n equals two superconformal field theory, and that's, you basically use those Ward identities to construct the relations between the matter and moduli metrics. There's a question then, how much of their analysis really relied on the fact that you had 2-2 and not 0-2? I can't say comprehensively if there is or isn't a generalization of special geometry, but it was sort of optimistic, maybe too optimistic, I don't know, but one must be. So that's the sort of the rough plan of attack there. Any other questions? Comments?
So from a supergravity point of view, I guess this is generalized complex geometry.
No, our target space is still Calbi-Auer. All that's changed is the vector bundle. So to study generalized geometry in the point of view of the target space, you would have to consider these spaces which I explicitly ignored at the start, were the ones with torsion and so on and so forth. And there you would need probably a very different set of tools. You would still have a 0-2 Wilczek supersymmetry, but the actual GLSM you look at would have to be something of the Wilczek and collaborators type, I imagine. Any other questions? Comments?
So, when is the next time jumping in?